This next session is on Windows development. Yes, Microsoft still cares about Windows development. You know, I've heard a lot about Silverlight and SharePoint and all that great web stuff, but we still definitely care about Windows development. There are, you know, there's plenty of businesses. I think most businesses still run on Windows, last time I checked. The majority of users still run on Windows on their home machines. So there's still a very big market for Windows, pure Windows development, and we do have an answer there, WPF, and/or Windows Forms is still a viable solution. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the enhancements in Visual Studio 2010 for Windows development in this session. We'll touch a little bit about some C++. We'll just hit on some of the stuff there. How many C++ developers in the room? All right, we still have quite a few. Great. All right, Doug will be happy. Was Doug in the room? Doug will be happy about that. He's not in the room. All right. Well, Doug, if you remember Doug from this morning session, Doug did some of the demos. Doug actually is the one who has done some of the demos on C++. So, so we'll talk about enhancements in C++. We'll talk about some .NET stuff and of course, Silverlight and how that applies to Windows development. So without any, come on. No, gotta turn it on. There we go. So before we dive too deep into it, one of the things that we want to do is talk a little bit about what Microsoft sees as driving factors in development today. And the very first one is, of course, user experience. So we've been talking about user experience now for a number of years. Kind of when we first came out with WPF, we first started talking really heavily about user experience and how creating a good user experience makes your applications more usable to the end user, more friendly, more returnable, let's call it, that people want to come back and use your application over and over again because they find it nice, easy to use. We see a lot of this today, and it drives a lot of what our users are demanding from us as developers. They see it on the web, right? They see Flash, they see Silverlight, they see really great HTML4 with CSS and all Ajax and all the great buzzwords to create these really cool sites. And then they come in to work and they say, well, why does my application here, why is it a gray screen? Why is it a gray box on a gray background with no color, no animation, nothing to make it, friendlier to use and easier to use and make my job, make me more productive in my job. And part of that has been limitations, right? Tooling limitations. If you've been doing Visual Studio for a long time and been doing C++, MFC, and everything from way back, you know the pains that you're limited to what you have there to create with. And that's gotten better. So we know that we need to bring that, into the development environment to make it easier for you guys as developers to build these sort of applications, to build these experiences like the Zune player, to build an experience like the Winter Olympics player that was done in Silverlight, or the Summer Olympics, or any of the other things that you've seen online that have this really nice user experience for our end users. Now, the next thing besides user experience is what we call connectedness. We're seeing this more and more today as we go out and technology improves. We see things like Windows 7 running Media Center on a PC connected to a TV to watch your TV through, and that great user experience that you have there. But that carries forward, too. Carries forward to phones. We're seeing better and better user experiences on phones where end users can use these client applications that they normally would have used on their desktop only in the years past, now carried over to phones. And people are starting to demand more and more capabilities out of their phones. So you see us doing things like moving Office, better Office capabilities, to the handheld device for people to be able to manipulate and work with documents. And we'll see some of that later, I think, in Dave's talk in the Windows Phone session. So we're not going to dig into it too much here. And then across the web as well. So we've already talked a little bit on the previous slide about user experience and what people are seeing with Flash and Silverlight and Web 2.0 technologies like Ajax. And that carries over. So you have that in all these different areas. And the thing that we need to do is make that easier for, as a developer, to create content or applications once and stream that across multiple devices. And we see that a little bit on the web side. With Silverlight, you can build a Silverlight application, you can deploy it to the browser, you can then turn around and with very minimal configurations, as I know Dave will show in his session, and you probably saw a little bit this morning, deploy that to the Windows Phone 7 come this fall when it comes out. So you can take your Silverlight app, move it across platforms. We already saw you can run it in SharePoint on the web. You can just run it in a regular browser. We'll see about taking it out of browser and running it on your desktop as a Windows application. You also have, covering the website easily to move. And then if you want to go a little bit deeper into the Windows client side and develop, more of a interactive, have more control over the client, interacting with the desktop, with the OS at a higher level, or at a lower level, more appropriately, then you can go to things like WPF, Silverlight's big brother. Or you can go to the traditional C++, MFC, or whatever your native code would be for that. So that's kind of where we're at, client platform. We're seeing that client become more pervasive across multiple screens and the need to actually be able to move that. So before we dive really deep into here, I want to spend just a few minutes because we're going to talk, focusing on Windows development, mainly Windows 7 development. So I want to just bring up a few things. How many people are running Windows 7? All right, good. All right, most people. All right, great. Well, a year ago, that wasn't the answer. Or 9 months ago, that wasn't the answer. So a few of the things we want to hit on that we're going to be talking about either in one way, shape, or form today is some of the things you can take advantage of within Windows to make your application what we would say light up, so look better on Windows 7 and take advantage of some of the new Windows 7 features. Taskbar. I'm sure you've all seen this. If you look at that picture on the top left there, the taskbar. So there's things we can do there. We can display a current image of our application, so we have control over what's being displayed there in the arrow highlight. We can do things with the button, so we can create an overlay and have it do a progress bar to indicate long-running tasks within our application so that users don't have to have it open to see where they're at. So file downloads, copies, all those things are kind of built in to Internet Explorer and Windows Explorer. You can do that same thing with just a simple line of code in your applications to take advantage of these features within your own apps and create these great user experiences that people are beginning to see more and more within applications and kind of expect to be there. We have libraries. So the concept of a library is just housing multiple locations in one location, right? Everybody kind of gets that. So by default, you have a documents library, you have a music library, you have a pictures library. And all of those under the covers really point to multiple locations on your system. They're configurable. You can add to them. So as an application developer, one of the things you can do to light up your application when it's running on Windows 7 is include, if you have a file store that you would normally put things in, include that in the documents library so that when people go into documents, they see your folder there, that kind of stuff. We have the ribbon. The ribbon moves around in Windows 7. We now have a built-in ribbon in Windows 7. We also have a ribbon control coming soon to allow for WPF, Silverlight, and Windows application development to have that Windows ribbon within your own applications at a base level. We have some controls coming there. So we see that kind of get into all of the Windows apps. Paint has it, WordPad has it, that kind of thing. Getting more of that common user experience that people are expecting as they get more used to the Office 2007, Office 2010 ribbon. We have, of course, two big ones, multi-touch and ink. So multi-touch was one of the big things that we've added in Windows 7. If you've been in the Partner Pavilion and you've been over near the Windows booth there, I think they've got, or I know we have, one HP Touch Smart, a nice big screen set up running the Windows Phone demo that you can actually go up and touch and play with. Also has all the Surface demos, because Surface is essentially the same thing as Windows Touch, just allows for more touch points than we do in Windows 7. Sorry about that. We have sensor APIs, so we have location, we have accelerometer, all that kind of stuff built in. So you'll see more devices come out that have this built in, have built-in GPS, things like that you can take advantage of. So if you're building applications that do mapping, you could tap right into the OS to get that location information and use that in your application as a way to figure, filter data or produce pop-ups and things that might be of importance to people that are in that location, that kind of thing. And then we've enhanced DirectX. So we've done a number of improvements around DirectX. A lot of those then filter into our .NET 4 changes that we've done moving forward. So as a developer, one of the things that we're confronted with many, many times is that there's often more than one way to do something, right? That's the typical, I'm an architect evangelist, so the typical architect answer is it depends. When somebody says, how would you do this? So there's lots of patterns, there's lots of libraries, there's lots of frameworks. So we have to choose. And usually the first place that people start with when they need to choose is, do I do native or do I do managed, right? There's trade-offs. Sometimes, you know, native might be the right way to go. Sometimes managed might be the way to go. It could be a resource issue. Do you have people who know managed code, that know the piece of managed code that you need to develop upon? And one of the things that we want to, you know, call out in this session is the fact that, you know, we definitely don't want you to think that we've slanted in 2010 one way or the other. We've done a number of improvements for both managed and native. So if you're a C++ developer, there's still plenty of stuff in there that we've added or enhanced for you. Then there's stuff that also applies for the managed side. So if you're a VB.NET, if you're a C# developer, if you're Silverlight, or whatever the case might be, there's plenty of enhancements for both. We haven't tried to slant one way or the other and point people towards native versus managed. We're unbiased. We just like you to be developing on the platform. So we'll see some of that as we go through. And the support, you know, we just lay out a couple of the features that I talked about in Windows 7 here. One of the ones I didn't talk about, parallel computing, is available to both managed and native. We've got some enhancements there that we'll actually talk about at the end of the session. So if we dive into our three areas of focus, really, which is the native, the managed, and then Silverlight, so kind of the web, starting with enhancements in Win32 and MFC, we've done a number of things to IntelliSense, to improve IntelliSense for you. Part of that is the way that we manage and work with the creation of the symbol files under the covers. So we're doing incremental builds for symbols. We're doing targeted so that it's focused on the files that you're currently working with. So as you move around and do IntelliSense, things happen a lot faster. There's, you know, tremendous improvements that happen besides that as far as deployment and speed and things like that as well, because we are not recreating symbols constantly for everything. We're getting smarter about that. So that's one of the big things here. Another big thing, I think they called it out in the keynote, is how many people, MFC developers? A few. How many of you really wish the wizard was back? So the MFC wizard is back, so that's another big one. All of MFC guys really like that. So that's back now. We have a few other things that, because of our symbol changes and stuff under the covers, that you're able to do now. And this is kind of cross. It's not really MFC focused, but we have the ability to navigate to and find. So I don't know if I'm going to do any. I don't think there's any of that in any of my demos, but you've probably seen it in the IDE. You hit Control comma. Pops open a new dialog. You can type in anything you want. So it's like a find, but it's like a find on steroids, right? It says, you know, I look for a knit. Well, it finds everything that matches a knit, whether a knit's at the beginning, the end, the middle. Then I can do filtering. I can say I only want, you know, properties, or I only want methods and stuff like that. So that is capable, and as fast as it is because of the changes that we made under the covers to the symbols. We now use MS Build for C++ applications, so get all the benefits of the MS Build system that the .NET guys have gotten for a while are now there for the C++ developers. And then, of course, Windows 7. So, again, just touching on the fact that we have support in C++, direct support for integrating into the taskbar and taking advantage of those new features that the taskbar exposes, adding ribbon, and I'll mention again, we do have the ribbon control coming in the next few months. I don't think it's out there yet. I haven't looked in the last week or two, but we have a ribbon coming so that you have a control that's shipping out a band. And then we have, you know, some of the enhancements in Direct2D and Direct3D. Manage code. So managed code, we have, again, a number of enhancements, similar to what we saw before. A lot of that stuff happens. We have the cache composition, which is allowing us to do a lot better text output. I would say it's arguably, you know, at the GDI clear type level of text. It's so good that we built the Visual Studio Designer on it. So if you didn't know, I'm sure everybody in here probably knows this by now, but the Visual Studio Editor in 2010 is built in WPF. So you get some interesting things there, right, with WPF. You can enhance that then, so you can build add-ins on top of that that do things. So some of the demos that we showed when we first started talking about this was automatically formatting comments. So you could style comments to look a certain way. So that was kind of interesting to people. And I was like, oh, that's some things you could do. You could automatically do other things that you wanted to do. But along with that, and because of the text enhancements, you have a lot better zooming. You no longer do you have to go into tools, options, text, and change your font size. We have just a bar that you can drag to increase it or decrease it. You can go extremely large, and I'll show you when we get into one of these just to show you what it looks like. And the type is still super clear because it's being done in WPF with all these enhancements that we've made. You can also, just as a shortcut, hold control and scroll your mouse wheel, and it'll do the same thing. But I don't have a mouse, so I'll have to show you the other way. Productivity. We've done a lot of stuff with tooling. So the first thing that you'll notice, and you probably noticed this in some of the demos earlier, is that what was known as CIDR, which was the WPF editor inside of Visual Studio, is built into Visual Studio 2010. So you now have a really great editing capability inside Visual Studio for WPF and Silverlight applications. And you probably also, I called it out during one of the demos when I made the change in XML as opposed to doing it in the Visual Designer, that it's almost instantaneous how fast they pick up changes. So if I make a change in the Visual Designer, the XML almost instantly gets updated. If I make a change in the XML, the Visual Designer almost instantaneously gets updated. So they're in sync. You don't have to go back and continually hit, you know, refresh this thing to get it to sync. We added a number of data controls, charting controls for WPF. We have a control theme, a theme control for controlling themes, which we didn't have before. We supported themes, but now we have a lot better support for it. And then again, almost an identical slide from the MFC, we have Windows 7 support. So what we're going to dive into is not on here. I'm going to show you a demo of a WPF application, and what I'm going to do is add jump lists to it. So let me just go back and call out this in case nobody's seen it. It's actually hard to see. I'll show you on the screen. One more. There we go. It says multi-touch. I don't have a multi-touch device. Sorry. But I'm going to show you a light-up Windows 7 scenario. They haven't given us the upgrade yet, so we have the touch device up there I can show you. But here we can dig into this. So I've got an application here. Let me go ahead and run it. And the scenario here is that we have again, we're kind of dealing with travel. It's kind of the theme throughout the day, travel. This one isn't Blue Yonder. It's somebody else. But what we have is we have a WPF application that's going to start up here. And what this application allows me to do is just book travel. Right? So it's a simple client application. The idea is that it would hit a back-end web service that the travel company is running. And this is my client that they give me to run for booking travel with them. And it doesn't want to run. All right, I must not hit F5. Thought I did. All right, so we'll give it a second to come up. And what we're going to do with this application is I'm just going to show you here a little bit about what it does. Can you guys see that? Do I need to change my resolution, maybe? I don't think you're seeing all of that on the screen. That one you are, okay. The screen must be just a tad off from the other room. So we have a simple application here. If I click on Maui, what it's going to do is say, you know, where do I want to go on Maui or hotels? I can click on hotels. And what's going to happen is it's going to show me hotels. And it's going to let me kind of see, you know, check-in times and information about them. And I can do things like book trips. So what I'd like to do, though, is make this a little more user-friendly. So if I look down here and I right-click on the application, we get what's called the jump list. And on the jump list, you just have some things that you can do, some tasks or things that are of interest to the user of that application. So, for instance, if I right-click on Visual Studio, I get Visual Studio. If I right-click on Internet Explorer, I get a couple things that are important to Internet Explorer users, right? I can start in private browsing, which means open in a browser window as in private, so I don't have to open a browser, click tools and options, and go to in private browsing and wait for a new one to open. So I can do it quickly. I don't have to go through that whole process. I can open a new tab in the existing window that's already open. Things like that that might take more steps to manually do, I can do automatically from here. So in my application, what I have is I don't really have any. So I'm going to add some. I want people to be able to book a trip to a specific location without having to open the application, click on where they want to go, and then get to that point. I want them to be able to do that from the beginning. Just click on it and go right to it. So we're going to go into Visual Studio, and we're going to do this a couple different things that we can do here. The first thing is, I'm using this interesting little app because I did not have any snippets on here, and I don't want you guys to sit here and watch me type. If you haven't seen this, Karen Corby from the product group has created this little snippet manager in WPF. You just create a text file, open it up in there, and you can drag and drop these into Visual Studio, so kind of an interesting tool. So I'm going to jump over here into my app XAML, which is my root. Yeah, let me move this over. And what I want to do in here is I'm just going to scroll down. And actually, let me move some of this, get rid of some of these windows. We don't really care about those. All right. And down here, what I'm going to do is just I'm going to add in a jump list. So. Oh, yeah, yeah. Thank you. I missed that. I forgot I hit F5 and not Control F5. So I just added a jump list to Visual Studio in the XAML file. And now if I compile and run this, I'll have some tasks that I can do from my jump list. Pretty straightforward, a couple lines of code. In my app, I add a jump list, jump list. I add a new jump list, and I create these tasks. I give them some names and what path it is that I want it to run. And I'm done. So now if I run these, we'll get that same app. And what I'm also going to do here is pin this to my start bar. So if I just minimize all that to make it easier to see, I didn't get it. It didn't compile on me, I think, is what happened there. All right. Let me pin it here. That way I don't have to go back in it. So when you pin it, things are available to you even if the app isn't running. So let me do that. Let me go back into Visual Studio. Let me save that. This is my reason here. Nope. Wasn't the right spot. Build it. So I'm just going to build that. Succeeded. Must have had the wrong chicken. All right. Oh, yeah. Okay. Let me do it this way, just to make sure I'm not jump list. Jump list. There we go. We'll just, instead of cheating, we'll try and do it this way. Make sure I didn't fat finger something in here. Jump task. All right. All right. I'm going to add them a different way. In the next step anyway, so I'm not going to bother digging too much into that one for you guys again. All right, it's supposed to show the jump list, not there. Let me add another variable to this because I want to show you that you can add more to this. So one of the things that you may have noticed here as I was clicking, you see VS Host and you see it with the kind of the default icon. You can actually set that icon. It's looking for a resource in your path, in your image path. So if you embed a resource into it, an image file, you can then call that out. So I can add an icon, resource path. I can set that to Notepad. EXE, and then I can tell it which one I want to use. So I can set the index to the first one, and I could do the same thing here with calculator. and then I can do this. Index, set that to 0 there. All right, and just, you know, I'll run it again, but it's not going to show it. So I'm going to add them. I'm going to add more a different way, because really what we want to show you is this doesn't show you a whole lot. It shows you how you can add them, but it's not really relevant to the application, right? We want something that's going to do something for the app. It's going to give users a better way to get into my app. So what we really want to do is jump back over here, and in our code for our main window, what we want to do is add this into here. So we've got our XAML file. We're just going to go in here, and in our main window here, we're going to add a new method and drag that over here. Jump list in code. So here we've got a method that I've created that is using the create jump list task in our code. So this is going to okay, here we go, Windows Shell. All right, so we're doing this in code as opposed to doing it in the XAML like we did before. And this is going to do some pretty straightforward stuff. Let me scroll back up here. And then let me show you the little zoom. So if I grab that and I drag it, you know, or select, you can see I can get, you know, fairly large here. It's a small screen, so you don't get too, but the video, the graphics behind all this allows us to get this resolution and still see everything relatively easily. And it looks like I do have one mistype in there. Jump items. Okay. All right, so here we go. What are we doing? Well, we're going to dig through our data. So we have some data out here that we have created in our application, and it's basically the children in our root XAML. So you notice that when I ran the app, we had the kind of the ball in the middle, and then around the outside we had the different cities or the areas of the world that you could travel to. So what we're doing is we're circling through those children, and for each child, we're going to add a jump task that says start planning a trip to whatever location that is, and then create a category called start a trip. So now as a user, if I know I want to go to Maui, I don't have to open the app and then click on Maui and get to that point. I can just right-click on it and say start a trip to Maui. So we will compile this. And since I pinned it to the taskbar, I don't need to go back into it. I shouldn't need to go back into it. yeah, let's do this. All right, so now it's running, and I still have no jump list. Oh, yeah, good call. That's actually the first step in the next step in the demo, is to point out that I didn't apply it. So, so I need to come in here, and I need to actually call my method. Oops, I can't debug in 64-bit. Break in. Here we go. missing steps. Okay, so now I need to call this. I need to call create jump list task. All right, so let me run that now. Yeah, I need to tell it what I want. I want the other one. All right, I'm going to breathe, a nice deep breath. View model. I want the one up top. That's the one I want. It's been a long day. Thank you. All right, but it's still not there. Does anybody know why? It's not supposed to be there yet. After you mentioned the not calling, then it triggered my steps that I was missing. Yeah, so it's not there yet because the part that should have been there from before, which I think has been changed since the release, from the demo when it was created, is why the XAML wasn't showing up as well, is we actually have to apply it. So we have to tell it, update the jump list. So easy thing to forget, so they actually made us forget it as part of the demo, is to not put it in there and show that it doesn't show up. So what we need to do is actually at the end here, we need to actually then go back to our jump list and say apply. And now, yes, because you need to apply it after each one. Now, things are working. And they aren't. Oh, it's been that kind of day for me. All right. Yeah, clear my cache, yeah. I don't think that'll work. Yeah. No, it's definitely not Vista, that I know. Yeah. All right. Well, that just kind of blows the whole rest of the demo if it's not going to show up. All right. But I think you guys get the idea what we're trying to accomplish there. Let's go back over here. Yeah. I can try it. Hey, at this point, I'll try it. I'm game. So you want me to move it, move this line. You think I need to put that down here? Hey, you know, that could be. I should just be not doing my steps right, but yeah. It was worth a try, though. Thanks. Thanks for trying to save me. All right. I'd say I promise the next one will go better, but at this point, all bets are off. All right, so then that leads us. So we looked at, we talked about MFC, we looked at WPF. So our last one is, of course, web development. And that brings us to Silverlight 4. We've seen brief hints and glimpses into Silverlight throughout the day already. We've already mentioned that it is the platform for Windows Phone 7 development, that and XNA. We've talked about how you can integrate it with SharePoint and Office. I didn't talk so much about Office, but you could integrate it to an add-in inside of Office application. Obviously, it's great for the web. We talked at the very first slide about how it was used for the Winter Olympics and the Summer Olympics, and it's used by NBC for their Sunday Night Football telecast to stream. But with Silverlight 4, which just released at the same week as Visual Studio 2010, we did a number of enhancements. Probably the number one asked for thing was access to devices. So we added support to be able to access microphones and webcams on the local machines. We also added support for printing, probably, if not number one, number two on the list. So you now have built-in printing support to be able to print from your application. A number of things in the DRM area, so we added some offline DRM capabilities, enhancements for protection and different security for rights management and content. From a business application perspective, we have WCF RIA services, and we'll touch on that briefly in the demo. We have shared assemblies with .NET 4, so you can actually build a Silverlight control, a Silverlight component, DLL, and use that in both a Silverlight app and a .NET 4 WinForm or other application. So when you have common code that you like to use across multiple platforms or multiple types of applications, you can do that by building it into a Silverlight control and then using that across that assembly across different application platforms. Rich text support, we have some more additions, as I mentioned, for WPF. A lot of that carries over into Silverlight. Clipboard access, so you can access the clipboard directly from within Silverlight. And right-click and mouse wheel support, so it's now easy to add your own right-click context menus and use the mouse wheel for scrolling. Outside the browser, which is kind of the why is it in the Windows session topic. Well, because we have added a number of capabilities to our out-of-browser scenarios for Silverlight. The first one is access to the Windows windowing APIs. We also have access through comm automation to be able to interact with Office and other outside applications. So now if you're on a Windows platform, being considered for future for our other platforms. So this would be kind of in the area of a feature that if you take advantage of it, you're kind of tied to Windows. But if you already know that, then you could take advantage of comm automation to interact with Office or third-party applications that have a comm interface. And another one for out of the browser, HTML browser control, so that you can actually surface HTML content within your Silverlight application if it's running out of browser. And we're going to dive into this and show some more here. But before we get to that, new controls. So we have a number of new controls as well. So some of the controls that were part of Silverlight developers, a lot of Silverlight developers, some, few, just a handful. So for the rest of you, and even for some of you may not know, we publish a control toolkit as a free download from the CodePlex site for Silverlight. It comes with a huge range of controls and or testing type things that you can use. It is published for free. It comes with the source code. You can use them. And basically what those are the things that we were trying to get into the product. And maybe for whatever reasons, they just couldn't go through the entire test cycle. Maybe they were out of band controls that somebody decided to write, and people thought they'd be interesting, so they posted them out there. But some of these controls have actually progressed and made it into the product. So the calendar control, we have the charting control, which I showed you earlier in the Office demo. and then we have some more improvements to the data grid and stuff that we're going to see. Improvements in Visual Studio for Silverlight and also for WPF include data binding. So we have the data sources window back now. So we can expose a data source through an entity data model, which is what we'll do here, exposing the database. If you remember from the Office session, I mentioned that we were using a service that was exposing data from SQL, and that was where we were getting our extra data. Well, we're actually going to create that service now. So it would have probably been better had these been reversed, so we could have seen that first and then gotten to that point, but we're going to get to it now. So you'll actually see how we created that service. Very straightforward. We use Entity Framework to do it, and that allows us to then drag and drop. So we can drag from our data sources over to our design view and have it automatically generate the list or the grid for us. And if there's one already there, have it automatically bind it for us. So we no longer have to do all that code. A lot of great work there for us. And then integrated designers. So I've already touched on this, the fact that we have both the source and design view, and they're integrated, so when you make change in one, it goes across the other. So how many of you that aren't Silverlight developers aren't Silverlight developers because you think it's for the browser only? Yeah, there's a few hands. Okay. Nope. So out of browser, we kind of talked on that a little bit. And you'll see that with all those enhancements, we think Silverlight is a great solution out of browser when maybe you don't need WPF or you want that web experience to be able to run in or out of browser. Can't store data locally. Okay. Nope. So in the past, you were limited to what we call the isolated file storage. And that was a limitation. Now, running out of browser with the changes that we made in 4.0, you actually can run in full trust, elevated full trust, out of the browser, which gives you access to the file system. So you can write to the documents folder. You can read from the documents folder. You can write to other locations. So you now have access outside the browser. Yes, I know. Yep. That was a big one, yep. And, of course, can't access local resources. Well, I already touched on that. We have comm automation now. So at least on the Windows platform, hopefully, as I said, coming in the future for the other platforms, or at least the Mac platform, is the one that we've talked about a little bit. We'll have support there. But through comm automation, you now can access your local resources even more. And not just comm automation. I already talked about the local webcam, the microphone, printing, all that stuff accessible through the application on the local machine if you're running out of browser, full trust. All right. Here we go. Let's dig in. I'm ready. All right. So this is going to be, like I said, this is going to be fairly straightforward, kind of what we did or what we were using in the Office session to get our data. We're going to actually create here so you can see how that's done. So I'm going to start from scratch. And the first thing I'm going to do is create a new project, and it's going to be an empty website because we're just going to do it all from scratch. We're going to wing it. Oh, sorry. All right. We're going to call this Blue Yonder Service. All right. Web application. And we're going to say OK. And it's going to give us our normal web app, so we get this welcome thing here. But what we're going to do with this is really we're just doing this to give us kind of the housing to run what we want to run, which is a web service. So we're going to go ahead over here, and we're going to add an entity data model to this web server or to this empty web project. Not that I want to add an item. Add a new item. And we're going to go down here to data. And an ADO.NET entity data model is what we want to add. And we're going to call this Blue Yonder. Add that. And the first thing that it does is say, where do I want to get this data from? Do I have an existing entity model that I want to use that maybe I created myself or somebody gave me? Maybe I have an ORM tool that generated something that I can use. In my case, I've got a database. I'm going to use that. And I'm going to create a new connection to SQL Server. And I'm going to connect to Blue Yonder. And then I have this Blue Yonder Airlines database, which is where all my data is stored that's coming from these external systems. So external websites, external web services that maybe these third-party applications are accessing, things like that. And this is going to go ahead and create my data model for me. It's going to ask me, what do I want to use it? What do I want to have as part of my data model? I'm not going to dig into, how you do this in a normal scenario. You're probably going to refine this quite a bit. You're probably not going to do this and just say, yeah, give me all the tables and all the views. Yeah. Woo. You're going to actually drill down. You're going to probably pick the specific tables, and you're going to the specific views, and then you're going to go in and set properties and stuff like on those so that you have the right settings and stuff. But I think you get the idea. So the first thing that it's going to bring up is my model. And if I go ahead and zoom this down a little bit, you'll see that it's fairly large. And it's done everything for me. So if you haven't used the Entity Framework, it's gone out. It's mined the data out of my database. It's figured out where I have relationships, what kind of relationships they are, whether it's a property or a method, if it's a view, and all those things have been created for me. So I don't have to do it, right? Great. Less work for me. Nice and easy. Took about 5 seconds. But what I do need to do is then I need to go in and make some changes. So I need to go back over here now that I have this, and I need to add a new service because I need some way to expose that data. So I'm going to add a new item, and I'm going to add a WCF data service. I got it over here. And WCF data service. And if you remember from before, we called that core. So I'm going to create core. And that's going to come up, and it's created this data service. And now I have to tell it, what am I using? What is this coming from? So I have my Blue Yonder entities, which is the thing I just created when I did the entity framework. The last step was, what do you want these entities called after I said I wanted tables and views? So I'm going to choose Blue Yonder entities. And that is done. So now I'm going to just go build this. Because what I really want it to do is I want to make sure that it does everything behind the scenes, that that's all hooked up, and some of the stuff needs to happen behind the scenes, and saving it and building it will do that for me. It succeeded, so the next thing I want to do is I want to go out and view my service in the browser just to show you what we see. So if I view this in the browser, we're going to get back the feedback from this, which is the information coming from my database, which is nothing right now. So I have an empty data set coming back, which tells me that my entity framework, even though it got built, doesn't allow me to see anything, right? So I mentioned after you build it, it's just generic, everything. If you look down here, one of the things I have to do after I set the entity is I have to come in and say, well, what's my access? So just to make this quick and easy, I'm just going to say, hey, for all my stuff, I want it to be all. Everybody has full rights to everything, because that's the way I roll. So now if we come back out, oops, I didn't want to run it. I wanted to actually view that. Oh, there we go, it'll work anyway. So now we have data. All right, so and we see everything. So all my tables, all my views are all visible here. And I can drill down on this. So have you guys heard of OData? So the open data protocol that we started talking about at Mix. So this is WCF Data Services exposed data through the open data protocol that we've done, which is basically REST coming out of a WCF service automatically for you. You don't have to do anything. So this is all REST-based. So what I can do is I can say aircraft, and it's going to go out, and it's going to run that, and Internet Explorer likes to take these RSS feeds and turn them into something nice for you. But if I were to change this or simply come in here and say view source, we see that I have all the XML just came back for all my different aircrafts that were listed in my database. All right, so that's kind of neat. But you know, we want to do a little bit more with that. We want to do something in Silverlight. All we've done so far is just create a service that we can consume. So now we get to the fun stuff. All right. So what we want to do now is we want to go ahead and create a new project, Silverlight project, inside here. So we'll go ahead and just add a project. And we're just going to call this just a generic Silverlight app. Nothing special there. But we do need to do something special here. So one, we're going to host it inside of our service, so we don't care about that. That's all good. Silverlight 4, I can target something else if I want. So I have the ability here to say, no, I want to do it in Silverlight 3. But I also have this nice little checkbox, which is WCF Real Services. What does that give me? Well, we're going to see what that gives me is the ability to do the drag and drop and have the data binding done for me. So I don't have to write all the CRUD, you know, operations on the back end if I don't want to. Now, I can go back and edit them if I don't like the default. But it gives me a fast, quick, dirty way to get up and running. So what I'm going to do is say, okay. And let that fire off. All right, and now I'm going to go ahead and add back up here. I need to add a few more things to work with, so I'm going to add a new item, which is a domain service class, which right there. And it's going to give me, you know, the ability to expose this more in a form that I want. So I'm going to call this get passenger booking values. Right, values, there we go. And this gives me some things that I can do here. So if I scroll down, this is all the stuff that the entity exposed when I created it. So these are the tables and the views. And I have this view called get passenger booking via web. It gives me the data, goes out and gets it. Say okay there. And now what I can do is I can come back in, I can build this so that all that stuff gets propagated. And then I can go back to the Silverlight window. So now I'm going to go back into my Silverlight application and now bring that data into Silverlight from the service. And I'm going to do it in such a way that it's all drag and drop. So I can go back to my main page. And we get our designer. And the first thing we want to do is go to our brand new or you know, returned again data services window. And wait for that to take a second to go out and find my data sources, which, there we go. So I have this get passenger booking. Now I just am going to drag, drop, and give it a second. And we're going to get a nice fancy little grid with everything done for us. So it's gone back. It's figured out what is coming back from it. And it's going to create all my columns. And I can go in and edit this. I could go in and say, well, I don't want this column, or I want a different column. I want to change the name. Things like that. So you have full control there. I'm going to go ahead here, reset this layout to fill everything. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and hit Control F5 and build it. And what we will get back is we will get back this Silverlight control hosted in our browser. With our grid, so everything across it, and if we give it a second, because I didn't go in and limit it, we get everything. So, drag and drop, I got everything. Woo-hoo. All right. Got to have one worth, right? Got to have one. All right. So you know, in the past, you would have thought, okay, well, that's, you know, okay, you got a grid, you got data in it, but you can't do anything with it. Well, not really. I can click on first name and have it sort. I can come in and click on the calendar and get a calendar control. I didn't do anything. It's all out of the box. I can type in here if I want. All that fun stuff. So everything there, out of the box. All right. So we are getting close here. The last thing was just going to be showing you some of the out of the browser. I will not, not going to do that right now. Let me get the finished one, and I'll just run that and show you that, because I do want to at least show you out of browser in there. So we'll go over here, and we'll go to demo. This is the mile tracker, and let's open this. Converting in-browser to out-of-browser. Oh, good question. It's a checkbox to support it. Now, do you want to take advantage of the other stuff, right? So in the properties, and I'll show you here, in the properties for this Silverlight application, there's a checkbox to enable running application out-of-browser, right? So as a developer, all I really need to do is check that, and it'll work. Now, I haven't done anything special, right? So I haven't done anything to take advantage of those out-of-browser capabilities. So then it would be up to me to then go back and write the code to say, hey, if I'm running out-of-browser, then I want to be able to do this. I want to expose this button that allows me to do printing. I want to expose this thing that allows me to capture from the camera or let them record audio. So it's as easy as checking that box and then from the Silverlight app just right-clicking and say install. But that doesn't mean you get all the extra stuff. You got to do it yourself. But yeah, it's that simple. So if I go ahead and run this, just to show you, this is not going to build. See, I should have never done that. I should have quit while I was ahead. And since I don't want you guys to stay late, I'm going to do that. I think most people have seen in the browser applications, but we just have a couple. So let's whoops. Well, we're not going to get to the parallel one. Man, this is not enough time. Can we make this like a three-hour session? All right, so Moore's Law, everybody is familiar with Moore's Law, I'm sure. You know that the processor speed will double every 24 months. You know, that stopped a while ago. I think everybody realizes that. And now we're into the multiple cores instead of faster processors. So as a developer, we need to change our focus, right? In the past, we could get away with things like, next month there will be a new processor out there, we'll just upgrade the hardware and it'll run just fine. If you think it's a little slow now, no big deal. Well, now we need to do things, right? Because we need to take advantage of this stuff and actually make things faster. Some of us have done it. A lot of people have gotten into multi-threading and things like that, which is, of course, not easy. And now we have parallel because we have multiple cores. We want to run things in parallel, not just multi-threaded. Parallel threading, of course, not easy to do, just like multi-threading isn't easy to do. Very easy to shoot yourself in the foot and have hangs and deadlocks and things. So we've done some things to make this easier. We have a parallel programming library, the threaded parallel library, that you can use to make this easier by just adding parallelism to your link or to your into your code itself with as simple as changing a for each to a for each as parallel. So trying to make this as easy as we can for you guys. And I've got 5 minutes, so I will dig into this one quick, and then we're done. That's it. So the basic idea here is I'm just going to show you a very simple application. Let me go ahead and pull this in. It's back here. Flight Manager. So I have an admin site. So the idea here is that we have admins, right? They want to monitor what's going on in our company and the requests that are coming into our customer relations folks. They want to kind of figure out how fast are they responding to people's issues and can we do something to make that better. So what we've got is this the site, and if we go ahead and run this, let me open the controller here. I opened the wrong one. All right. We named it something else. Let's see. Flight Manager. There we go. So if I go back to this one, open. This has a flight manager. It was already in it, so that would save myself time. So again, what we're going to do is I'm going to show you some code that's not going to run in parallel, and then I'm just going to flip a switch. So there's no coding involved here, so we should be good. So I'm going to set this as my startup project. And before I run that, what I want to do is I want to show you this file. Let me just the schedule controller, which is down here in the manager. Here we go. So we have a library file that we're using. We have this controller, and basically what we're doing is we're just grabbing data and we're looking at it. And we have some code here that's going to do this using link. We're going to go ahead and select all of our flight information that we've gathered, all this call information. And we're going to display this and do some stuff on it. So if I run this and I bring up Task Manager, and you see here I've got a multi-core machine. I'm just going to put this over on the side and then let you see this running. And actually, I'll just drop it down here because I'm going to have to click on some stuff that I won't be able to see otherwise. So this will run the app, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to be able to drill into a specific request, and then I'm going to be able to select that request and drill in further beyond it to get the results, you know, what is the data behind this request. So the app will start here, and very, you know, basic interface for our administrators to use, just a typical grid, kind of like what I just showed you, a little bit of styling on it to make it a little pretty, and there we go. So here you can see, it shows all my flights. I can actually view a flight, and then once I'm in a flight, I can hide it back again. If I want to do something with it, like cancel the flight, I can do that. And now if I hit start, you notice that the performance thing is running there. You see all my CPUs here. I'm, you know, doing okay, but I'm really getting, you know, pretty high on the CPU. I'm using both fairly well, but not at probably as good as I could. And it's taking quite a while to complete because of that. So now if I go back and go back into my code, we can, as simply as going up here, I'm going to go up here and I'm going to uncomment my define. And then if I go back, you'll see that I have this as parallel. So now I've taken the exact same code, but all I've done is added a dot as parallel onto my potential flights control and done my select. So link is automatically in the back end. Parallel link is going to convert that and do the parallel query for me and optimize for the multiple cores. And if we scroll down, we'll see a couple other things that do that as well. So if I scroll down, we'll see here's a for each. So all I've done is taken my for each and turned it into a parallel for each. Pretty straightforward. So things like that. Now if I run it, and let me have it stay on top. What we should see is less processor utilization, and it should complete in a fairly significantly less amount of time. So if we run that, well, we're pegging it more, which means we're using it more. But we're getting a little bit better across. You see we're using more of the processor. We're taking advantage of them. But it did come back faster because of that. All right. So that is how you can take advantage of what you have there fairly quickly and easily. Let me jump back over here. And as I think you already saw, we are at the end. So summary of our Windows development, if it comes up. Right? You can use managed or native. Either one. We've got lots of improvements for both. What you saw there was mainly managed code. We do have some native samples that we can point you to or show you, as well as building the rich, business-centric rich applications with Silverlight. You saw some of that there. And then, of course, parallelizing to take advantage of multiple core machines and that horse processor, the horsepower underneath the covers that you maybe aren't taking advantage of today. All right, so I believe that will wrap this session up. Thank you.